for May 24th. Please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dear Lord, we ask for your blessing today. We ask for your wisdom and guidance for this commission, so we may make decisions in the best interest of the citizens of Butler County. We ask for your continued blessing and protection for our men and women who are fighting in faraway lands, for our protection and safety, and for the democratic way. We ask this in your name. Amen. It is now 9:30. We have a public hearing on Kyle Station Road name change. Greg, nice to see you.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Today we're here to the public hearing for the name change of Kyle Station Road. And this has been caused by the relocation of Kyle Station Road. Kyle Station at the intersection of Route 4 has been a hazardous intersection for a number of years. Matter of fact, over the last 20 years, we've had two fatalities and 77 accidents and about 19, 20 of them with injuries. And there's been an outcry, and the opportunity presented itself for us to correct this. And with ODOT's cooperation, the dedication of some right-of-way out there, and minimal, I wouldn't say minimal, but slight expenditures of county money, we're able to correct this situation. And it's caused to look at the name changing of Kyle Station Road in reference to where it was and what's going on now. What you got in front of you is an aerial that borders basically on the south or on the left side is Liberty Fairfield Road, gives you an overall view of it. State Route 747 on the east side. You can see the Elks is up. You gentlemen can't see it, but I'll point it out here.
I can see it.
Yeah, the Elks is up in here. The Kroger's on Liberty Fairfield is in this area, and this is a relocation outlined in blue that we're looking at, which is causes a Kyle Station, an existing Kyle Station, was pretty much a straight shot east to west down through there. And now we're caught. It's with the relocation, we're swinging to the north to run at Elk Creek Road or Elk Run, across from the subdivision. The Ohio Department of Transportation has agreed to signalize the intersection. We did a study probably in the early 80s, I think it was, don't hold me to the date, that started allocating where intersections should be on Route 4 for traffic flow. And this is one of the locations that was spotted. And we've just had the opportunity to do this with the advantage of right-of-way being dedicated. This is a blow-up of the area. So what you're going to see is what our intention is to create like a slip ramp coming off of Route 4. This will be one way, this section right in here. The one way eastbound. As you go westbound, it's going to head into a cul-de-sac here. I think my pointer's dying, but right in here is a cul-de-sac. So you cannot, and we'll have a ditch in the back side of there that you can't get through to Route 4 to make a left or a right. So it's going to be one way in. And then the main intersection is to be at point B up there. So what this has caused here is to look at the renaming of the section of Kyle Station Road from Route 4 to the new relocated Kyle Station Road. And one of the reasons for looking at the continuity of Kyle Station is going to be now from Route 4 on its new alignment all the way out to run the existing alignment of Kyle Station. And then the majority of your traffic is going to be coming from the new intersection and going east or west. The change and keep the existing Kyle Station Road, we feel is going to be very confusing to the public. That's why we're looking to rename that section of Kyle Station Road to another name. And we are proposing to rename it to Perrin Lane. The reason for that is Stan Perrin was a county engineer. Matter of fact, hired me as a co-op, in 71, and we had Perrin Place was named, if you recall, Milliken Road, and before the bridge, that was Perrin Place, and it was named after Stan. And that, with the advent of the new bridge over to Bypass 4, we continued for the same principle here. We continued that and named that Milliken again, renamed it Milliken to keep continuity through the alignment, which is the same reason we're looking at this renaming of this section of Kyle Station Road, to keep continuity on Kyle Station. And that, and we're proposing to name this after Stan. Stan lived on Kyle Station Road, out closer to Yankee, is where his residence was. And that's what made this proposal. We're not diehard to that name, but we do feel pretty strongly that section of the roadway between existing four and the old the intersection and a new one needs renamed for continuity's sake. With that, I answer any questions you may have.
Greg, on Route 4, are there going to be turning lanes?
No, there's a median. There is turning lanes in there. They're extending to one turn lane. There is a left-hand turn lane now into the subdivision. We're going to duplicate and add additional turn lanes into the future Kyle Station Road and signalize
south.
That. Yes, south.
So there won't be a backup on Route 4.
No. Plus, the spacing adds to this, too. Existing Kyle Station intersection was jammed right up there close into Liberty Fair with all the congestion, and separating this out is going to be a better safety feature.
Greg, I know I mentioned that to you before about the name change and the existing businesses there, and I've talked to the owner of the car lot, but I do understand, too, that sometimes it's extremely difficult to try to work with each and every person when it's something of this nature. So.
In reference to that, Chuck, we made an effort. Ron Porter, my office, I think, contacted every individual out there to talk about some of it and let them be well abreast of what's going on and understand there is some financial obligation in reference to the station or letterhead changes and so forth in that regard. And we, within reason, we're willing to cooperate to some degree in doing that because in this case, we can do that because there's not that many residents quite honestly affected. I get a little worried about setting precedent, quite honestly, because
sure.
If I move onto a major roadway and we'd have this same kind, it could get quite expensive. But in this case, it isn't that drastic because there's pretty minimal residents as long as some of the cost, and we have to view them well within reason.
What kind of time frame are you on this whole thing?
We should be paving this probably in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. This was on our capital improvement list that we submitted earlier this year.
Is there going to be at the point C where you can turn in to get to the gasoline station? I'm not even sure if the gasoline station is still operating.
No. Yeah. No, that's going to have access out and in. You won't be able to go through for the gas station purposes only. We're going to cut that road back off, Greg, back right behind the gas station, so you can exit through the gas station. And I don't think it's in service right now.
I didn't think so either. But the cul-de-sac, will there be a barrier or what sort of
guardrail at the end of the cul-de-sac?
Okay.
And then there's a ditch that comes off of there. We had to come around the west end of that cul-de-sac.
Okay.
The car lot is almost facing Route 4. Isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. Car lot is right on the corner of Route 4 and existing Kyle Station right in that area right there.
Where's that? Oh, okay.
ODOT's garage is in here. Ramcrete's in here. And we got a number of residents right through here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Greg.
Okay.
During this public hearing, does anyone like to speak during this public hearing? Yes, sir, if you want to come up and please state your name and address for us.
Yes, my name's Jack Walden. I own the property on the corner of Kyle Station and Route 4. I bought this property in 1985, and a lot of you may know there wasn't much up there when I went up there, and some of the other residents have been there longer than I have. This road has been Kyle Station Road for probably over 75 years, you know. You're talking about, for me, you know, I talked to this gentleman. They said to put a price on it. How do you put a price on this? You know, you got a business. I've been in business since 89 up there, and everybody's affiliated with JW Auto Sales on the corner of Kyle Station or Route 4. How do you put a price on this? I don't know, you know. I know I have to change all my state dealer's license, all my vendor's license, all the auctions we go to. This has all got to be changed, plus the paperwork. I was talking to the gentleman from Realm Creek. You know, they're against it. My proposal is either name it the New Road, New Kyle Station, and leave some affiliation with this, you know. It all boils down to the bottom line, I think, is the taxes. In 06, I generated $105,000, $255 in sales tax to the state of Ohio. Cat tax. I don't know if you guys know what that is. That's a new tax that Taft put on before he left. I paid $1,269 in cat tax. Real estate tax, $3,774. Personal property tax, $2,994 to the county. Now, this is not including federal and income tax I paid. Totally, I generated $133,000 in taxes for this county and state last year. I got some more here, just a minute. The next concern I got is the access to northbound Route 4. I'm not going to have any. I got to go up here. My customers has got to go up and out. Whoever owns the service station, which my understanding is in bankruptcy right now, those people are really taking the hosing on this deal because they're only going to have access to northbound traffic. Southbound traffic is not going to be able to get into them unless they go a quarter mile down the road and turn around and come back. Is that right? Are you going to close that across? No? Okay.
Are you talking about right from here?
Right.
Well, they can't close it because they've got the Elks Country Club there. How are people going to get in there?
I don't know. I've been there for 20 years, okay? The most of the problem you have right there is the people turning into the Elks Country Club and coming out into that. I don't know how much a problem you're solving with what you're doing here with Kyle Station. If you're there on a daily basis, you would see that. That's where the jam, that's where they need a turning lane at, is going into that Elks. I mean, I'm not here to try to step on anybody's toes. I'm just trying to where I'm at, you know. Over the 20 years, we've estimated that we've generated 22,000 people coming to that area to either buy vehicles or look at vehicles. You know, the gentleman come up to me and said, give us a figure on what it cost. How do I know? I mean, how can you come up with a figure like that? You know, I don't know what it cost. Well, I was talking to the gentleman from Realm Creek. They're against it too, you know. But do you want to speak? Okay.
Yeah. So we can.
But my ideal is to, you know, give us something. You know, either make it old Kyle Station, new Kyle Station for the new road. I mean, that's just what that's what I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Walden.
My name is Todd Morgan from 4604 Kyle Station, and I'm with Realm Creek. And basically, it's the same thing for the business on that road. So we were wondering if it wouldn't be possible to make the what you guys want to make Kyle Station. Can that be like a lane or something like that, and have Kyle Station Road? Can you have two, like a Kyle Station Road and a Kyle Station Lane? Is that possible? And just have this cutoff be a lane, so it kind of doesn't affect anybody on the road. It's been there for 60 years and. That's just what we were thinking. And if it does have to be a name change, then we would think that it would be nice if someone that's been on the road for so long would have a say in what that would be. That was just our only thoughts on it.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm Calvin Ruffner. I'm 4651 Kyle Station Road. And if you're going to rename the road, I think it ought to be named after some of my family, because everything on the bottom of that you have there has been in our family for over 60 years. And I have, I'd like to see it named either after my family, or maybe you could make it this Kyle Lane. I think it may be Kyle Lane. Maybe they would be better for like your Ramcrete and that, but there wouldn't be a full, you wouldn't have to change everything all over on it. But I think that should be considered. To me, they've made two or three mistakes on that, what they're doing there now, but of course I'm no engineer, so they don't pay no attention to me anyhow. But I did know where the water line was.
This is a public hearing. We're listening to you right now. So
well, when they started out there, when they was developing over here, they lost the water line. It was on the opposite side of the road. Matter of fact, I bet the contractor $20 that I knew where the water line was, and he paid me off of it because I showed him where it was. If I hadn't have done that, when they was putting the water line in for the subdivision part there, they used a big track hoe. If they'd have made one more dig, they'd have hit a 12-inch water line there with a big track hoe. So you'd have had a flood out there. Then last week, about 2 weeks ago, down on the other side, they lost the gas line. There happened to be a pretty sharp bulldozer operator, and he caught it before he cut it. But that's just a couple of the things that I've seen happen out there, and been there about 60 years, a little over. So I don't think that the name should be changed completely to Perrin Way, because Perrin never lived on that section of the road in his life, because we've lived there over 60 years. And I'd like to see it either made Kyle's Lane or New Kyle Station or something like that, to keep the Kyle's name on there.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to speak during this public hearing? Okay. Greg, do you want to respond to any of that? Any of the,
From my standpoint, I'm not married to Perrin Lane. My gut reaction is if you change your name at all, though, you're going to have to change all your license anyway. Yes, from building a reputation on the road, we run into this all the time. I mean, that's some of the eminent domain issues that are in the Supreme Court, in the court system now, is paying businesses, which has a negative effect in reference to some of that, because if you start down that road, and that's why I'm hesitant on reputation type things. What we're talking about, so there's no misunderstanding, is there's cost of changing stationary without some limitation, and a pretty minor limitation, because we understand there's some inconveniences in this. And we've been through this. This is nothing new. If you recall down at Union Center, we went through it all when we changed Beckett Road. That's been in the history of the Beckett family for years, and it's from the standpoint of continuity. And I think the reality, if you don't make those changes, you're going to really confuse the future public. And we all know how fast a growing area this is. Is old Kyle Station a problem? No. I'm just trying to give due respect for a man I thought deserved some, and particularly since we had a place named for him before, and now just with the relocation continuity, we've taken that name out. But I'm not married to Perrin Lane. Old Kyle Station or something, if that'd be the change and makes their life a little easier, that's okay.
How soon do you need a decision from commission?
Isn't that his decision? Well, we're gonna be paving and naming it. I'd say probably within a month, I think would probably need it.
So when did you
say? About within a month. Within a month, I'd say.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Mayor.
Anyone else like to speak one last time during this public hearing? Well, thank you very much.
Motion to move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll be making a decision in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Walden. Yeah. Sure. Chuck.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye, Greg. Next on the agenda is Miami Conservancy District update.
Well, good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
I'm Mike Eckford with Miami Conservancy District. I manage our water monitoring programs, and I wanted to come in today and give you an update on some things that we have going on with Miami Conservancy District that we're really excited about and potentially have an impact on Butler County.
First of all, just to kind of refresh your memory a little bit about who we are, we operate and maintain a flood protection system that protects communities such as Middletown and Hamilton along the Great Miami River from flooding. And we got five dams. We've got a dam up just north of Piqua, Lockington. We've got a dam just north of Dayton on the Great Miami River called Taylorsville Dam. Then we're just northwest of Dayton on the Stillwater, Englewood Dam. East of Dayton on the Mad River, we've got Huffman Dam, and then on Twin Creek in Montgomery County, we have Germantown Dam. Now, the way these dams work is normally they let water flow right through them unimpeded, but kind of acting like a giant detention basin, when we get enough rainfall and there's enough runoff and we reach some critical amount of flow, they retard water and hold it temporarily in a storage basin and then allow it to slowly move on through, and that prevents flooding downstream. Okay, the problem we ran into when these dams were put in is in order to be situated properly, they had to be built on top of the aquifer. Aquifer's real permeable, lets groundwater move under the dam, and when you store a lot of water behind the dam, you put a lot of downward pressure on the upward side of the dam, which begins to move water, and you get under seepage. If that amount of under seepage gets too great, you have the potential to have a blowout at the toe of the dam, and the dam can fail. We've been involved in a capital improvement program called our dam safety program over the last 10 years to correct that under seepage issue. And at three of the dams, we have done that. We're currently addressing that up at Lockington, and we're getting ready to we're in the process of implementing that project, should be wrapping that up here over the next year and a half or so.
Mike, is that, when you talk about the five dams, that's different than low-level dams?
Yeah, different thing. The low-level dams are generally put in for a recreational purpose,
right,
create a pool like you
Hamilton,
have here in Hamilton.
Holmes Park and
sure, yeah.
Middletown.
Yeah, no, these are for a very different purpose. These are for flood protection, yeah.
I wanted to make sure that the young lady had that distinction.
Sure. Yeah. And so we're kind of in the latter half of our improvement project there with the dam safety initiative. We'll be working on Lockington. We still have some work to do at Englewood, but that's progressing. At this point in time, we're under budget. We're ahead of schedule, so things are going well, and hopefully, knock on wood, that continues. The other project I wanted to update you on is our nutrient trading program, which Butler County Department of Environmental Services is participating in. The way nutrient trading works in the water environment is we take, our Great Miami River Basin. Land use is about 85% agriculture, okay? And most of that agriculture, if you get up into the headwater areas like Shelby, Dart, you know, parts of Montgomery, Miami County and everything, that's probably 90-95% agriculture by land use. Ohio EPA is looking to restrict or make tighter standards for nitrogen and phosphorus, their nutrients. They want to see those levels go down in the river because they cause problems. for fish and bugs and aquatic wildlife. So the potential is to have costly engineering upgrades at the wastewater treatment plants in order to accommodate those new standards. Now, with trading, in lieu of spending, and we estimate over the next 20 years to comply with these regulations, wastewater treatment plants in the area that drains into the Great Miami River Basin would have about a $300 million capital investment, all of them combined. It's possible, though, that you can get the same amount of reduction in nitrogen and phosphorus by implementing practices in agriculture, such as no-till farming, putting buffer strips along drainage swales, doing more sophisticated methods for applying their fertilizers and things like that. It's possible that you can get that same reduction in nutrients for a much lower cost. So the way the trading program works is participating wastewater treatment plants pay into a fund, okay? And then a request for proposal goes out from the soil and water conservation districts. They go out and recruit farmers who want to volunteer to participate. The farmer implements a project which reduces phosphorus or nitrogen and generates credits. The money that the wastewater treatment plants paid into can then go towards purchasing those credits. The wastewater treatment plant gets credit for that in their permit, and in lieu of an expensive upgrade to the treatment plant, for a fraction of that cost, they get the nutrient reduction. That's how it works. Now, in this last year, in 2006, we put in wastewater treatment plants put in $87,000 towards projects. That's calculated to make a 36-ton reduction in nutrients to the Great Miami River. We've done a second round of projects. Now, we put out an RFP earlier this year. It'll fund about $275,000 worth of projects, and we calculate about 175,000 pound reduction in nutrients over about a five-year period. Now, the cost per pound of reduction, a cost of removing a pound of phosphorus ranges anywhere from 57 cents per pound to about $1.97 per pound. It would be perhaps 8 to 10 times that cost-wise per pound if you were looking at an engineering solution. So we're excited about that. Butler County Department of Environmental Services is one of the wastewater, the Swordsville plant is participating in that program. And we're excited and think that that's going to result in a lot of good improvements to the environment and save people money. Final update I'd like to give to you today concerns our groundwater program. And the handout that I gave to you here called Protect the Source. Just to give you a little bit of background, Ohio EPA requires communities that operate a public water system to do a source water protection plan. Basically, protect the area that contributes water to their well field from having contamination. Now, Middletown has a plan. You know that Fairfield, Hamilton, City of Cincinnati, Southwest Regional Water Authority, they all participate in this Hamilton to New Baltimore consortium. They've got a plan together. But there's no funding at the state or federal level for these kinds of programs. It's basically an unfunded mandate. We want you to do this, no money available, no grant dollars or anything, so you're on your own. We're proposing to make a change to the official plan of our groundwater program, which will allow us to put about $250,000 to $300,000 available for grants for communities to implement source water protection programs. There's no increase in cost for funding for the program, but basically to make that some of that money available, communities that have a plan together could apply for the lion's share of the funding and use that for actual implementation of projects. They might want to go after a conservation easement. They might want to help clean up a business perhaps in the downtown area that had to go out of business, and there's some perhaps some underground storage tanks or something like that left in the ground. They want to get out so there's no contamination or something. Funding could be used for projects such as that. a smaller amount of that share of money could go to communities that don't have a plan together yet and need to get one together so that they can also move forward into do some of these projects. So we want we're making that available. We've gotten some input from a number of communities. They've said that the you know, lack of funding has been a big barrier towards implementing source water protection programs. So we're hoping that this will help kickstart some things and help continue to preserve and protect our water resources for drinking water. So those are the main three things I wanted to update you on today. At this point, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mike, I have a question about the, I know that you're in water monitoring. There was a, some time ago in the river, and I'm trying to think of the chemical name, chloride or there was
perchlorate.
Yes.
Yeah, that
was found in the water. Has that source been found and taken care of?
Yeah, I believe that showed up in one of Fairfield's wells.
Right.
And as of this point in time, the exact source of that remains unclear. The levels of perchlorate have been very low. There's no maximum contaminant level set by the federal or the state, so it's kind of hard to say, you know, what exactly is a safe level versus a not safe. They continue to monitor it. We've been helping them there. We've helped them by collecting some samples in and around their well field, but unfortunately, we don't have a definitive answer on exactly where that came from.
Another question, and I'm, again, this is probably a message to take back to the Conservancy. You know, in talking about our low-level dam here in Hamilton, mainly used for recreational, as you said, to retain the water and beautification, but it also has become a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that there is, with money, engineering to take away the boil within the low-level dam.
Yes, that can be done.
And for my voice on County Commission, and I think Chuck would support me with this, that we would endorse a plan for the Conservancy to help with taking that boil out. So if people do find themselves going over the dam or, you know, during training exercises like the just recently we had the tragedy there, that won't become a problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
and we're actually in the process right now of looking into that and working with some communities to do some modifications. We actually own some of the low dams, and we're going to be getting some estimates here soon how to modify them.
That would be great, and we would fully endorse that.
Okay, I will.
The other thing is we're coming up on the 100-year in 2013, which was the advent of the Miami Conservancy right after the, you know, the Great Flood of 1913, and at that time, how they determined the taxing districts from that was where the water from the flood actually reached. Mm-hmm. And I know that my business, which is out on Route 4, is still a part of that district, taxing district. Now, with the advent of so many other developments through the river, is there any plans to relook at the taxing district with regards to who's being taxed and who's not, with as it being a part of the Conservancy district, taxing district?
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue. We've got, actually now we've got this technology called GIS and everything, and we can go back, take those old maps, and make an actual GIS layer that shows where the 1913 flood lines were, and we can plop that down on parcels and then see, you know, are the parcels that are being assessed, does that line up, does that make sense with where the 1913 flood line was? And that's kind of how we tend to move forward with the assessment process. There's no intention to go outside of that flood line.
Sounds like it ought to be shrunk now since so many improvements have been made.
Well, but we go by what was in 1913. That a lot of that improvement and the shrinkage of the what area that would flood is because of our infrastructure. So in order to be able to assess and maintain that system, we go by the what actually flooded in 1913.
I was thinking from the standpoint of from 1913, there's the development of so many other businesses that have gone on the tax rolls that would allow the Conservancy to, you know, look at the amount of money that they're collecting and then reduce it from other people who have been paying the taxes for over 100 years.
Uh-huh. Okay, I understand. I see what you're saying.
So,
okay. I will communicate that.
Thank you. Derek says, I'm not holding my breath on that one, but the real message is thank you for the update on the monitoring. We're happy that our wastewater plan is cooperating with you, and also the safety factor of the low-level dam.
Okay.
Would be greatly appreciated.
All right, you're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you covered it.
Right.
I'll support you on that.
Thanks. Okay. Next, we have a public hearing on LifeSphere. Abbott. Good to see you.
Good to be seeing. Good to see you all. This is a public hearing to consider the possibility by the county of healthcare facility revenue bonds for the benefit of LifeSphere, which is a not-for-profit corporation. With me is Ken Huff, who's vice president and CFO. If the bonds are approved, and the public hearing is to consider a maximum amount of $40 million. Proceeds will be used to improve the LifeSphere's property up on Contreras Road up in Oxford, build some new facilities up there, and to improve the facilities down at the LifeSphere's facility down in Springdale, which is Maple Knoll, which is the original facility. These bonds, if approved, would be like all other healthcare facility revenue bonds that the county issued. No obligation of the county, wouldn't affect your 10 mil or direct debt limitation. It's solely the obligation of LifeSphere. The bonds will be secured by a letter of credit of U.S. Bank, so that's that. Ken can explain the improvements to be made, should you be interested, and if not, I can answer any of the legal type questions.
Thank you for being here. Ken, what's the $40 million? That's
$40 million is a upper limit. We're looking at construction of roughly $33 million at this point, so we're not expecting to reach the $40 million. On the Knowles of Oxford campus, we're looking at 15. We're calling them paired villas. It's basically duplex homes in the 2,200 square foot range. That would bring our independent living units from 80 up to 110 units. We have broken that project into one phase of building 14. We have had 10 people put priority deposits down on choosing from the first 14, so we're meeting our pre-sale commitment to make the project work. On the Maple Knoll Village campus, we have been on that land since 1926. It's been several different uses. In the 1950s, you might have known it as the Maple Knoll Hospital and Home for the Friendless. In 1977, it became a retirement community, and where we have 30 units in five buildings that were part of that 1977 construction, they're basically obsolete by today's standards, and we're knocking those down and putting up five different configured buildings, a total of 56 units, and that's the work at Springdale. It's roughly two-thirds of proceeds will be in Springdale, one-third in the Butler County.
So. This is the point of information. The Council of Springdale has approved this project.
Okay.
Yeah, we have all zoning approvals and all city approvals that we need.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And good luck to you. Anyone else like to address commission during this public hearing? If not, I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And I do have a resolution then to approve the new money issue.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Ken. Good luck to you.
See you tomorrow.
Communications.
Approve travel and training, approve minutes from the last meeting, hire student intern for Butler County Planning Department, advertise for bids for bulk treated sodium chloride, receive and refer bids for paving of various township roads, grant special hauling permits to Trax Heavy Haulers and Remire Structural Solutions, exchange bond for Creekside Metals Section 1 and Alsace Metals Section 14, cancel sidewalk performance bond for Woods of Lakewood Section 3A, also for University Point, execute contract with Barrett Paving, approve agreements for performance of professional engineering services and construction inspection services, and environmental services, release one-year maintenance bond for public water and sewer line extension to Monroe Crossing, approve the extension of contract with PLG Utility Restoration, hire wastewater operator 2, approve amendment number 1 to the agreement with Brandstetter Carroll Incorporated, approve transfer and appropriations under Job and Family Services, approve payroll for April 28th through May 11th, approve child daycare contract with ABC Learning Center, approve 12 CSB personnel actions, hire family resource worker 2 under miscellaneous, advertise for bids for janitorial cleaning services, advertise for bids for architectural services, appoint John Moser to TID board, execute a maintenance agreement with CBS Global Services, amend resolution for Port Authority board reappointment, approve reimbursement to Cartwells for a yearly EMA advisory board meeting, approve TID contract with DES for Liberty Interchange Project, authorize donation of surplus copier to First Baptist Church, approve terms of engagement of the local government service section of the auditor's office, approve reimbursement, another one, for EMA cameo training, and award contract for lease of office space to Fort Hamilton Healthcare Corporation.
There's no changes. I move to accept the
second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
I have one issue. I don't.
Okay, Chuck.
I'd like to suggest that we kick off our performance audits. I'd like to get a cost estimate and maybe move ahead with ours, if that's a possibility. If we're going to ask the other office holders and department heads to work with us on performance audits, I think we need to take the lead on it. And so, if we'll check into those things, and I know the auditor has been an advocate for performance audits, and I'd like to recommend that we do ours first and then the auditor and then move on to the possibly some of the others.
Okay.
Obviously,
I agree.
Depending on the cost, and
sure.
we'll look at the.
I'll get that information back to you. I'll make some calls today.
Thank you.
I just have one thing, Derek, and I can. It's, I guess, all right, in this meeting, we're going to have a new member within the next week and a half or
mm-hmm.
by June 5th. I'd like to have you prepare a packet of information that will help the new commissioner hit the ground running with regards to past minutes and projects and the organizational sheet with some bios mm-hmm. of different mm-hmm. people who are in leadership within the county and just whatever you think would be necessary for the new member to get acclimated.
Okay, very good.
Good.
Okay, anything else?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.